It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. 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 And Criterion.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another installment of the Criterion Project. I am Conrado Falco, one of your hosts, and I'm joined, as always, by the wonderful Rachel Wagner. Rachel, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing pretty good. Hanging in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, doing good.
And we have a special guest this time around. We're going to talk about Guillermo del Toro's Cronos, his very first film. And we have our first returning guest. A big welcome to the great Rosa from Latinx Lands. Rosa, how are you?
Oh my God, I'm so honored to be here again. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me back. It's been a good day.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. This is so fun to get to talk with you again. And this time for a film, at least a little, I think, closer to what you guys cover on your podcast, which is nice.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Last time.
Yes, when you guys pitched the film, I was like, yes, I'm in.
Yeah.
Without a doubt. I didn't even think about it twice.
Yeah. Awesome.
Great. I want to ask you, Rosa, to talk a little bit about your podcast in a second. But before we do that, we want to a little bit about some very sad news that we learned last night. It is Saturday as we're recording, and last night we learned that actor Chadwick Boseman has passed away from colon cancer after battling for 4 years with the disease. I think it was not known publicly that he had been sick for a while, and so it was a particularly shocking and sad passing. But of course, Chadwick Boseman is known for having played a lot of major roles in Hollywood, especially playing Black Panther for Marvel. And, you know, I think he really touched a lot of people's lives in very meaningful ways. It made me think of, I saw once Keanu Reeves was on The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, and Colbert, I think kind of as a joke, asked him, Keanu, what do you think happens when we die? And Keanu responded that he thinks when we die, the people who loved us are going to miss us. And I think a lot of people are going to miss Chadwick Boseman. Our hearts go out to his family and to his fans and anyone who knew him and everyone who was touched by his work.
Yeah. I echo that sentiment. When I heard, I was pretty shocked. I mean, just because, I mean, it's so sad, and it hits, he's only 4 years older than me. And I think he's gone, and that he battled it for so long is just adds to the shocking. This that the entire time that he was T'Challa, he was battling this. I mean, it's just amazing to think about that is really very, it adds to how impressed I was with him always, and it just adds to it.
Yeah, it's a very humbling moment and a very a sad one as well.
I just echo everything you both said. I think as of now, I'm still kind of in shock of it. I'm still pretty much speechless. I have nothing else to add. But yeah, I think the only way we can honor him and keep his memory alive is, of course, watching his films, but perhaps living the way he did and just continue doing what you love, be passionate and dedicate your life to your passion. And it's very unfortunate. I'm still sitting here. It's unbelievable, still shocking. But all we can do is be kind to one another, because we don't know what somebody else is going through. And let's just, again, just be kind with each other. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Totally agree. Now let's get on with the program, because, you know, that's what we're here for. And since the last time you were here, Rosa, you have started a podcast of your own called Latinx Lens. And I really want to hear, and I would love for you to tell our listeners about the podcast and what you guys do over there.
Yes, we just launched it. Oh my God, it's a few months ago now. I was saying just like if it was last week. So Latinx Lens, it comes from me being, quickly, just a little background, just being disappointed. I was taking a film course, gender and race in American film. And week four, we were going to learn about Latinos and Hispanic representation and contribution to the film industry. And I was disappointed to read only a page and a half of Latinos in film history from the whole 500-page textbook. So I was just discouraged, disappointed, and then just the idea came up to come up with the podcast and perhaps do my own, give in my two little cents and shine a light to Latinos, filmmakers, actors, and in the industry, and also television and film, and what they've done to help and do. And we also do film reviews. We, Catherine and myself, Catherine Gonzalez, who's my co-host, co-founder, we also review movies. We try to highlight movies that are either Latino-centric or from Latino filmmakers, but we also try to review other, like, newly released films, just so you can have our pitch on the movie just from our own unique Latinx lens.
Great.
Yeah, that's great.
You guys have been doing great work over there, definitely.
Yeah. We'll have a link to all of that in the description section, so people want to follow, they can check out your podcast, because that sounds really great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you guys.
Of course. And in the meantime, we at the Criterion Project have been watching some movies. So, Rachel, what have you been watching on the Criterion channel, or, you know, anything that's Criterion adjacent?
I've been extremely busy posting reviews and watching movies. And the one that I wanted to bring up was the my favorite one that I've watched recently is The Personal History of David Copperfield. I really enjoy period pieces, but this feels like a period piece with like a little bit of a Wes Anderson influence to it. It's sort of quirky and different and a little bit random at times, but in a good way. Even the casting is very colorblind. So it's sort of eclectic and surprising. The cast is great. I love Dev Patel. He's one of my favorites. I loved him in Lion, and I love Slumdog Millionaire. So I've really loved him for a long time, and he's great in this. And Tilda Swinton is in it. Hugh Lowry is in it. He's very funny. It's funny, very, in my opinion, at least, very funny. Got Peter Capaldi, Ben Whishaw's in it. So great cast, a really incredible production design that's very whimsical, and wonderful costumes. And I particularly wanted to mention it on this podcast because I think that you'd like it, Conrado. It struck me as something that you would like.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's not directed by Wes Anderson, but it felt like in the spirit of Wes Anderson to me. And I am not super familiar with this particular Dickens novel, so I can't really speak to it on that level, but just as a kind of a quirky period piece, I enjoyed it. And so, anyway, it's not a Criterion channel, but I think that it's on brand with kind of the type of films they typically tend to showcase. So okay. I'd recommend it. I enjoyed it.
All right. Yeah, it's directed by Armando Iannucci, Death of Stalin, which I like both of those movies. So I think I definitely give this a watch. Where can people watch it, Rachel? Do you know?
I think it's available on VOD.
Yeah.
That you can rent it for. I don't think it's one of the super expensive VODs, but But yeah, you can rent it, or it is playing in some theaters.
Great, right, great. Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So how about you, Rosa? Do you have something that you've been watching that you'd like to recommend or talk about?
Yes. So, I'm over here plugging in the podcast again. So for Latinx Lens, we have this segment, where we have, Catherine and I do a Latinx Lens recommends, and we talk about a film from like before the 70s or the 60s. We've been sticking around with the 50s and the 40s, and that's either Latino centric or has performances from either Academy Award winner Latinos, although they're not that many, unfortunately. This time we decided to go with Jose Ferrer, who's the first Latino and only, unfortunately, Latino to win the Academy Award for leading actor. So he wins the Academy Award for Cyrano de Bergerac from 1950. And I just recently watched it. I understand why he won the Academy Award. His performance is very, very, I was very much impressed by his performance. I wasn't aware of this play or of this character at all until just we started doing the podcast. So yeah, definitely a movie that, I thoroughly enjoyed, great performances, and yeah, highly recommend it. I think I saw it on YouTube, but I think it's also available on Amazon Prime.
Great.
Yeah.
Wow, great movie. I didn't know that Jose Ferrer was Latinx. I thought he was Spanish for some reason, but now
no,
I'm
he's
looking it up.
Puerto Rican.
He was born in Puerto Rico. I did not know that. Wow, great.
Yeah.
Right. And I bet
that's a fun one. I really enjoyed that.
Good. Have you seen it, Rachel?
Yeah, it's really good. I mean, I love the whole Cyrano de Bergerac. It's a really fun story and fun romance. But yeah, he's great in it. Very charismatic.
Yes, it's very
great.
So I don't know if Copperfield is available yet on VOD. I'm looking, and I think it may just still be in theaters. I'm not sure, but keep an eye out for it.
Okay. Definitely will. And for myself, I have just noticed that the Criterion Channel has a new section, I think, called, it's one of their mini director focus sections, and it's called Directed by Stephen Cohn. And I have seen two out of the three movies on the mini collection, and I think they're both really, really great movies, and I want to recommend to everyone to see them. One of them is called Henry Gamble's Birthday Party. I think it's from 2015, and it is a story about a kid. His name is Henry Gamble, and it's his birthday. I think he's turning 16 or 15, something like that. So he's having a pool party, and the thing is that Henry lives in his dad, I think, is a pastor, and so his family is kind of religious, but he thinks that he might be gay. He's kind of like discovering his sexuality. And it's a movie, I was very, very moved by it, and I was very impressed because it's a movie that, I think it's rare to find a movie that takes both sides of the perspective of the situation of a character like this as sincerely and respectfully and honestly as this movie does. It recognizes what is problematic for Henry in his particular situation, but also what is humane and what is real in a very, very touching way. And the other movie, which is one of my absolute favorites from the last couple of years, is called Princess Cid. And it's the story of this girl named Cid who goes to spend the summer in Chicago with her aunt. And it is just one of the most beautiful movies I have ever seen. It is so, to me, moving. I, like, the other time when I tried to rewatch it, I was crying from the very beginning. And it's not like it's a super sad movie. It's just so, to me, it's just so beautiful. A story about life and being alive and finding yourself and finding the things you have in common with someone who's different from you intergenerationally, but also with other people. I just think this guy, Stephen Cohn, makes such beautiful movies, and I wish that everyone sees them, because they're really, to me, they're really special.
I haven't heard of that one, so, but I have heard of, you mentioned Princess Sid, so I'll have to check it out. Yeah,
definitely. He's a director based in Chicago, and these are very independent productions, small scale films, but they're just so great. So I always, anytime I have an opportunity to recommend them, I do, and they are available on Criterion Channel right now.
Cool, great.
Yeah. So now this brings us to the main event of the day, which is the movie Cronos from 1993, directed by one Guillermo del Toro, his very first movie, first feature-length movie. So, Rachel, would you like to tell us a little bit what the movie is about?
Sure. Yeah, I'll try to explain it. So basically, this man finds this scarab that's kind of like it almost looks like sort of a music box kind of a thing. And he ends up getting, it has these magical kind of properties. He ends up turning it on, and he ends up getting stabbed by it. And it causes him to have this renewed energy, this youthful exuberance, but it turns out it's all coming at a price, and he starts to get a thirst for blood. And so it's kind of a monster movie, but it's also kind of a vampire movie. You also have his wife that's involved, but then there's also this other man that sends his, I think, nephew after him to get the scarab, so they kind of, there's sort of a chase back and forth kind of element as well. If you like sort of monster movies, then I think people will enjoy it.
Yeah, it's a kind of like a device that it was created, I think, and there's a prologue in which they say it was created by some ancient alchemist, I think, in Mexico, and it's a device that will allow you to be young forever, kind of, or, you know, mm-hmm. stop the aging process or something like that. So this old man, the two men are kind of old. One is the antique owner, is the protagonist that Rachel was talking about, and then the other old man is kind of, he's sick and he wants he's dying and he wants the artifact so he can, you know, stay alive. But he's obviously not afraid to take very violent and nefarious means in order to get it.
Yeah,
very much in line with the kind of Guillermo del Toro sort of horror influenced sort of filmmaking and storytelling. So I'm curious to see what everyone thought about the movie. Why don't we start with Rosa? Rosa, what do you have any thoughts about the movie?
Yes, I do. I've heard a lot about this movie. I just recently watched it for this episode, and thank you for making me watch this, because I was surprised by how much I liked it. Of course, it's Del Toro's first feature film, and I was very much impressed, very, very impressed by it, because we already get to see, like, Del Toro's vision and his imagination and how he likes to just play with these fantasy elements and the horror and mix it with the drama. And I thoroughly, thoroughly, very, very much enjoyed it. I think I was more drawn to the relationship between the protagonist and his granddaughter. It was very it pretty much moved me, because he's, of course, he's growing old, he wants to stay young, and then later realizes that whatever it is that it's getting injected into him, it's perhaps immortality, although not really immortality, because he can still die. I liked everything about it, like just, I was thoroughly surprised by it. And I'm glad I was able to watch this, because I've been slowly but surely been trying to get through Del Toro's filmography. And for this to be his first film, I liked it very much.
Oh, nice. I'm glad to hear that. So you are a Guillermo del Toro fan, would you say?
I am, yes. Definitely am.
Right. Yes, so am I. I mean, I wouldn't put this up there with Pan's Labyrinth or, you know, something like that, but but I thought it had a small, almost like a Universal monster movie kind of appeal to me, a small monster movie kind of appeal. And you don't really see those that often anymore. Like, everything has this big spectacle. And so just like a creepy monster movie was sort of fun, I thought.
Yeah, I agree with that. It had a very sort of, to me, kind of retro feeling about it, because it felt kind of out of time for the 90s, and also, and even till now, I feel like seeing a kind of like horror type story that is not really one of the famous monsters that we already know, right? Like, it's no Dracula's, no Frankenstein, but there is some horror element to it. And it's played out by these two older men, you know, which is like, it's also kind of unusual, I feel, nowadays. Horror, I feel like now it's all teenagers or women, right? Because I feel like a lot of the time people feel like it's the characters that are more vulnerable if they're women, or I don't know, I'm not sure why, or younger men or young or teenagers in the slasher movie. But this just felt very old-fashioned, like seeing like Bela Lugosi and Boris Karloff, the Black Cat or something, you know? Just like these two men with different purposes going at each other. And you can definitely tell that Guillermo del Toro really loves this kind of movie. And it's a kind of passion thing for him. And I think that's what makes him so endearing as a director and as a personality. I feel like everybody likes him just because he's so passionate about what he does. And he has such a nice attitude about everything. So he's a very infectious person, I feel like. And I'm saying this as someone who is a little bit not always on his same wavelength. I like some of his movies more than others. But I always, even when I don't like them that much, I'm never like mad at them or at him, because I'm like, well, this guy, he just loves the things that he loves and he gets to do them, and good for him. You know, like, it's so nice that he can do that.
Yeah, I agree. He's a very passionate filmmaker, and he manages to always bring his stamp onto things, even if it's something like the Hellboy movies that he did. You know, that they have a flair to them that you know it's a Del Toro movie that you're watching, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this? Were you a fan?
You're talking to me, right? I like the movie quite a bit. I wouldn't say it's my favorite of his or anything like that, but I think there's maybe like a little bit slow paced for me. I feel like it could have been a little bit picked up. I did just some scenes in which I thought that it dragged a little bit, but I thought it was pretty solid in, as a story. I agree that the production value is really great, and it has this like amazing look, and the art direction, the place, like the town and the houses where they live. It's nothing like, it's not like it's a fantasy world, but it just, everything looks so perfectly of a piece and of a specific kind of world and vibe that I think was very evocative to me. And there were certain moments definitely that were very, very visceral and that had a really big impact in me. Particularly, I really loved the moment when, okay, spoiler alert, I guess, we're talking about the movie, so we'll just go ahead and spoil it. But the moment where he's thrown in the car and he dies, and when he's dying, he has this kind of monologue in the voiceover about, and he's just reminiscing about like the fact that he's dying, and he's like saying, oh, there's all this blood around me and I wish I could live longer, but I guess I have to die. I don't know. There was something about that was very, very, it was very touching in a way. And it was also kind of scary of thinking of that moment in which you might be in that situation. in which you realize that you're dying, you know? Yeah, that really stayed with me.
I also thought, I loved that, and I also thought when he almost gets cremated, that was a pretty crazy moment.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, yes.
And it even just the when they showed up close the scarab piercing his skin up close, I was like, ooh.
Definitely, yeah, definitely like the violence in a very Guillermo del Toro sort of way. The piercing of the scarab, and also so many cockroaches at the beginning of the movie.
Oh my god.
That was nice.
I don't know. There's something about Del Toro and his insects that. But yes, what you were just saying, Rich, I was actually going to bring that up because I think Del Toro just brilliantly builds up that thrill and that suspense when first at his funeral, like the camera like just lingers on his face and you're thinking, well, I don't know about everybody else, like he's going to open his eyes or he's just going to sit down or something's going to happen here. But no, it continues. And then same thing when he was about to get cremated, I'm like, well, he's going to open up the thing again or do something. But no, it just gives you this sense of course, horror. You're about to be burned and you don't even know if the person is alive or not. Well, they're assuming he's dead. But I thought he did that brilliantly. Or maybe because I've seen a lot of horror films. Not that many, but probably if I would have seen the movie when it came out, it would have had a different effect. Maybe I would have appreciated it a bit more. But,
Yeah. One thing I wondered about is I wondered what he was trying to say about religion in the movie, because there's sort of a lot of talk about, is God going to save him from this? And even at the end, he kind of believes that because of his sacrifice, God has saved him. And but the movie also seems kind of skeptical about that. And did you all have any thoughts about that?
I definitely wanted to ask that question. So thank you, Rachel, for doing it. No, that I think it's great that we're on the same page, because that was also a big question that I had and I wanted to talk about. Definitely a lot of religious imagery and a lot of motifs in the movie. I mean, when they first encounter the scarab kind of artifact, it's hidden in this sort of archangel statue. And the guy who's looking for them, his name is De La Guardia, and his nephew, I think it is, right? The one, Ron Perlman, he is called Angel De La Guardia, which means like an angel. So there's this whole thing of wanting to make a religious allegory, I guess. And I'm not sure what's going on there. I don't know. Maybe Rosa, do you have any thoughts about that?
Yes, no. It's all good. I did notice, of course, I noticed that too, but I don't know. I think I'm right there with you. I'm not entirely sure what he was trying to do with religion, and unless he was trying to, I don't know, not compare and contrast, but perhaps compare like the immortality to something not being natural, not natural. I frankly don't know what he was trying to do with the religion aspect of it. But I think his main focus here, for me, what I took from it is the subject of immortality and what a human, an older man is willing to do in order to maintain it and keep it. And you might think being immortal is a good thing because you're going to be with your loved ones perhaps a little bit longer than what you think. But in reality, there's some consequences to having that type of mentality, and of course you see it in the film. So I don't know, that's really good question about religion, because frankly I don't know what he was trying to do with it,
but I think you're onto something there.
Yeah,
sorry, go ahead. I think you're onto something with what you're saying about immortality and and that stuff, because definitely now that you're talking, it just makes me think, definitely the story, there's a tension between the kind of like, you know, what Rachel was also saying of the main guy, the man, kind of putting his fate in the hands of God versus using this kind of like dark magic to stay away from death, right? Which is kind of this natural God-given part of life. And he's kind of mm-hmm. trying to go against it. And then there's also this recurring theme of plastic surgery, that the, you know, angel, the guy who's chasing him, he wants to get a nose job, and that comes up again and again. And I think it's also another thing of like wanting to stay young, wanting to change your body, wanting to go against the laws, what God has given you or what God has prepared for you in a certain way. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's something there, especially knowing that one of Del Toro's favorite movies and stories is the Frankenstein story, which is so clearly mm-hmm. about like wanting to play God and going against the rules of God. So I think we're maybe unpacking something there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good point about sort of playing God and thinking you know more than God, and the kind of the value of human life, that, you know, you could, that they're kind of at this point, by the end, he's kind of a shell of a human that's not a real mm-hmm. Person. And so I don't know, I think that there's also something there about the value of the intrinsic value of each person here. And it's an interesting mm-hmm. interesting thing.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting to see it be played out, at least to me it was, by these two older men, because mm-hmm. it made one movie that is very different, but it made me I remembered this movie while watching the Chronos. And the movie that also came out around the same time is the movie Death Becomes Her from mm-hmm. Robert Zemeckis. I don't know if you've seen it, with Meryl Streep and Goldie Hawn playing like these movie stars who want to be younger, and so they do this witchcraft sort of thing.
Right.
And it made me think of that, of like how we, a lot of the time we think about this vanity of youth and staying alive as a female thing. And so I was interested to see it be played out by men this time around, and be like, yeah, I feel like men are also interested in this stuff and don't want to die and want to stay young. And, you know, like, it's not, vanity is not just for women.
Right. Yeah, no, that's very true. It's very true.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that until now you're bringing it up. Yeah, that's very true.
And how seductive that cry for continual youthfulness, and you know, how tempting that can be. Because I used to, when people would say, "Oh, I'm 29 forever," I would be like, "Oh, it's so lame." But I have to say, the older I get, the more I'm like, "I get it. I understand it." Because I don't know, like, I don't feel any different really from when I was in my early 20s. I feel basically the same, and I still have the same desires and thoughts, and I mean, hopefully I've learned a little bit and I've matured a little bit, but still the same me. And and so I don't know, like, there is a side of me that's like, that wants to be kind of 29 forever, because that's how I feel.
Right.
You know, so it's interesting.
Yeah, totally. And I bet that gets even more frustrating as you get even older, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when your body starts to change on you and it doesn't feel the same.
Right.
Like, that must be really, you know, a thing to experience. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. So should we move on to our questions?
Let's do it.
All right. So our first question, as usual, is, what makes this a Criterion film? And so who wants to go first? Rachel, maybe?
So I think that the reason why this is a Criterion film, it's the first film of a major director who has done artistic, creative kind of films for the most part. And he's Academy Award winning director for The Shape of Water. And so I think it's appropriate to have his first smaller film here on the Criterion Channel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How about you, Rosa?
Yeah, I was going to say something around the same realm. It's Guillermo del Toro. His first feature film, certainly an influence to what a lot of people are doing. Not a lot, but some of the directors that are currently working. I just recently watched Tigers Are Not Afraid by Isa Lopez. And she said that Guillermo del Toro has very much influenced her vision and her style and imagination for her film. So certainly a film that it deserves to be in the criterion for just Guillermo del Toro himself, mm-hmm. but also for he's just one of those directors who's just unique and he has this style. He's one of the few very directors out there where you pop in a movie and you can automatically notice. You can say, yes, that's a del Toro film, because he has mm-hmm. this trademark to all his films and his yeah. vision. So that's what I think.
totally. Yeah, I think I agree with both of you, what you're saying. Same reasons, although I think it's also maybe a good time to address something that happened earlier this week when there was this New York Times article talking about the lack of diverse representation on the Criterion Collection, specifically about African-American and Black American directors, and how mm-hmm. there's only, I think, 4 movies in the collection about that. And talking about this and about Cronos, you know, a Mexican movie, or at least a Mexican co-production. And what is and isn't in the Criterion Collection, I feel like I would like to say that, you know, we obviously, I love the Criterion Channel. I watch it every week, and I'm very happy to pay my money to subscribe to it and then enjoy all these amazing movies. And definitely, since Criterion has built its reputation as a kind of like the gold standard of the canon and what is good filmmaking and what is great, prestigious filmmaking, I think I definitely agree that it's important to have diverse representative movies and filmmakers included in the collection. And I would like to hear what you guys think about that, even it's maybe I'm bringing it up out of the blue. But also, I also want to say that I would like to recognize that Criterion is a company, and they do a lot of their decisions based on, you know, what is going to sell and monetary value. And they're also not the only company. So we love Criterion, but there's plenty of companies who are doing great work of making movies available that that wouldn't be available otherwise. And a lot of the time, things that are in the Criterion Collection have to do with contracts and bundles. You know, they are releasing a bunch of Netflix movies in the Criterion Collection. And sometimes I wonder about some of their choices, whether or not they would have done it if they didn't come with other movies that they're going to release and things like that. So always to keep all of those things in mind, you know. But yeah, do you guys have anything to say about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing to bring up. That article was definitely an interesting read. It's something it had not occurred to me, because you don't really see the whole collection kind of as a whole very often. You're kind of looking at each individual release and like, oh, look. And it's definitely concerning that they don't have more Black directors, filmmakers in the collection. I'd be interested to see it. But I'd also encourage on the channel, I feel like, you know, they've had some collections of for people of color led films, but a lot of them feel extremely obscure to me, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I feel like I need more context in order to kind of know what it is I'm going to be watching, like just a little bit. It'd be nice if there was a trailer or a little bit more of an explanation so that I had a little more guidance, because some of these are, they had quite a few films from like the 1920s, like going way back. And I kind of wish there was also a mixture of more contemporary things, like maybe some films by Spike Lee or John Singleton or maybe Ava DuVernay, someone like that, that's a little bit more sort of contemporary that I know about. Or if they're going to go obscure again, which is fine, but I feel like I need a little more context into what it is. And I would say that actually across the board on Criterion Channel, I wish that we got a little more context into what it is that we're watching. Because at least like on a lot of these other streaming services, you'll get a trailer, you'll get like a little bit more kind of information about what it is you're watching. And so that would be my request to them, is to try to help us to be able to, curating the content is not enough. We need a little more information.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would you like to chime in, Rosa, with any thoughts about this?
Oh, would I? Oh, wow. Well, I'm not, I do have the Criterion. I also pay monthly, and I don't use it as often to notice if there's a lack of representation by particular actors or actors of color or such. But unfortunately, it does not surprise me. This is why Latinx lens currently exists, because our history is also being erased from film history, the books, at least from the classes that I'm taking. So it doesn't surprise me that Criterion is lacking representation in films like this. And I think what all we can, I don't even know if there's anything we can do about it except for us to create a platform and talk about these films. Because now that I'm thinking about it and I get to, that I've been doing Latinx Lens, I've come to realize that there are a lot of films out there about Latino representation or Latino filmmakers, but they're just not being talked about. One perfect example is Salt of the Earth from 1954, first film to be done with Mexican and Mexican-American actors, depicting the Mexican-American experience in New Mexico about zinc miners. And of course, it was produced and it was done by blacklisters, so that's probably perhaps why not many people know about it. The topic itself, and it's very progressive for its time, but not a lot of people talk about it. And I mean, I tried to do to talk about it in Latinx Lens, and those who did listen to the episode now know about it, so hopefully like that we can make a little bit of an impact. And also even the more beloved ones like La Bamba or Suit or movies that have been, that are, it's the same 10 movies wherever you go Google and you ask the Latino representation or in film and such, you get the same movies, you know. Get La Bamba, you get Suzu, you get American Me, you get La Mi Familia, Selena, but none of that is there. So I think it's just a matter of us talking about them. And well, in my case, me, because I'm very vocal, as you guys follow me on Twitter, should know, very vocal about representation, especially Latino, Latinx representation. I guess just talking about it and then just trying to do or say something,
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I think, I want to say, I think you've been doing great work to do that on Latinx Lens.
Thank you.
Salt of the Earth, for example, it's a movie I had never heard about it until I heard about it on that podcast. So.
Oh, wow. Good to know.
Yeah. You're doing the good work.
I'm trying. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, great. So let's go on to our next question, which is my personal favorite. Where does this movie rank in the in the pretentious scale?
Right.
Which is from 1 to 10, how pretentious do we think this movie is? Because let's face it, pretension and Criterion go hand in hand.
Right.
So who would like to go first?
Well, I'll go first. I didn't think it was that pretentious. I mean, because it does have those sort of underpinnings of a classic monster movie kind of a feel. So that, I think, kind of grounds it and makes it approachable. but it does have some metaphors to religion and some other vagueness that kind of can, I could see being a little pretentious. So I gave it a 6 out of 10.
I think I'm around the same, and probably for the same reasons. I feel like the what we talked about, the universal horror aesthetic, and the, I feel like it's pretty straightforward, is very easy to get into as a, you know, a common or regular casual movie watcher. You don't have to be some sort of film expert in order to enjoy the movie, but it does have all these things that we were talking about, religion, and it wants to be, you know, maybe like an elevated horror sort of thing, or like a have these big themes, and then sort of, so yeah, I would probably put it around a 6 as well. Mm-hmm. How about you, Rosa?
Oh my, I have it at an 8.
Oh wow, okay.
Yeah.
But I don't know, now that you guys are mentioning all of these things, no, I'm still going to keep my score. I'm having it at an 8. because I guess I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I guess the elements and it was giving us just a little glimpse of Del Toro's brain and how it functions and how it works and how he mixes different elements. So yeah.
I mean, if I was giving my rating for the movie as a whole, I would probably give it more of like an 8. But but just as far as, do I think it's kind of pretentious and full of itself? Like, we kind of, I joke that Godard to me is the 10. He's the most pretentious you can get. And then something, I don't know, super mainstream would be, I don't know, what's not very, Jurassic Park, not pretentious at all, 1. Something like that. And so this, I would say, to me, is just slightly has a little bit of sort of trying to be that artsy, say something kind of, that can sometimes be a little, but yeah, I'd give it a 6, but yeah, I mean, it's subjective depending on how you take the film.
Right. True.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Do we want to, before we go into our remake section, I'm talking about Guillermo del Toro, since we all have thoughts about him, do we want to say what our favorite Guillermo del Toro movie is? That's in case people are not that familiar and want some recommendations.
I think my favorite is probably The Shape of Water. Just because it is this weird love story, and I think it has a lot of humanity to it, and I think Sally Hawkins is so great in it, and yeah, I mean, it's tough. I like Pan's Labyrinth a lot as well. It's such a weird, dark fairy tale, but I think I probably will go with Shape of Water. It's my favorite.
Rosa?
Yeah, I have to go with Pan's Labyrinth. It's definitely my favorite. Although, just to be fair, I haven't watched his entire filmography. I'm almost done with it. So, so far, Pan's Labyrinth, yeah, it has been my favorite. Just the fantasy element, and to have the whole story take place in a war setting, which is perfectly fitting. And yeah, just everything about it I love. I don't want to take too much time.
Great. In that case, I will go with, I think actually it is my favorite of his movies, might be actually Hellboy 2, The Golden Army, just because I think that movie's fun to me. It's like such a, to me, that's the idea of a great superhero movie, comic book sort of thing. It's just like a lot of fun, great creatures, incredible effects. It's funny, it moves, and it's got great performances. I really, really enjoy that movie.
Yeah, it's a good one.
So yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so now it's time for our very special moment in which we are going to pitch a remake of the movie Cronos. And I think this was a little bit of a tough one for me, so I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys have in mind. So, Rachel, do you want to go first?
So mine isn't all that creative. It's a pretty straight remake, but I think that it would be perfect to cast Paul Rudd in this lead role, because he is so ageless. He looks exactly the same as he did in Clueless in 1995. So, so I think that he would be perfect playing this part of this man who gets this new energy, this new lease on life. And I just think it would be interesting to see him play this role, because we've never seen him do anything in horror that I'm aware of, at least. Or I think he was in one of the Friday the 13th movies or one of the Halloween movies. But anyway, we haven't seen him do much in horror, and I think it would be interesting to see what he did with it.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely that's inspired casting. Yeah. So how about you, Rosa? What do you think?
Oh man, I went on a completely different route. Of course, I stayed with Latinos actors, so it just keep it the same. I wouldn't change much. But I don't know. I was thinking the leading role to give it perhaps to Antonio Banderas. I guess his performance from Pain and Glory has just stuck with me. Mm-hmm. So I think he can definitely do this part.
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah.
Be good. Yeah, and I like I said, I had a bit of a tough time coming up with something that would feel super satisfying to me. But I do think that something that I think is really cool about Guillermo del Toro is that throughout his career, he has sort of mentored and championed other directors who are interested in horror and in that sort of thing. So something that I would love, and maybe it's a little bit out there, is for him to get a bunch of very, very young aspiring horror filmmakers and make a remake of his own movie in which maybe it's divided in sections and a different director does each section, and they can just like experiment and get an extra budget and, you know, and get the opportunity to make a Guillermo del Toro type movie with his mentorship or something like that. I don't know. I just, the best I came up with. But I think that's a cool idea. I would watch that movie.
No, that's a good idea, because he has been very good about producing and mentoring and quite a few films that, like last year's Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, for instance, was produced by Del Toro. There's quite a few like that. And so that would be interesting way to kind of take it, is to kind of divide it up or do shorts or something like that.
Yeah, and I know he's produced some animation, so maybe one of the segments could be animated, and maybe one of the segments is in Spanish and then the other one's in English, you know, and then you just get all this like mix of different styles. And yeah
that could be really good.
Yeah. You sold me.
Oh, great. All right. So I think that pretty much covers our discussion of Kronos. Thank you, Rosa, for coming. Before we say goodbye, though, Rachel, will you tell us what we're going to be doing next time?
So we are going to be talking about the animated shorts collection that is on Criterion. It's in the Saturday Matinee section. And they have pretty strong words about it, that it is the stunning group of shorts. And so we'll see. I love shorts, animated shorts, and I love animation. So I hope they say it's a dazzling array of gorgeous animation. So
for some reason, you seem very doubtful.
I am very doubtful.
It is a dazzling collection.
I am somewhat doubtful. The only reason I'm doubtful is because my sad career going to the animated shorts at the Sundance Film Festival. Usually they are terrible, but I go out of solidarity to my medium that I love so much. And so that's the only thing that gives me caution. But I hope that I agree with Criterion, because I love animation. But either way, it'll be really fun to talk about it, because it's fun talking about shorts, because you can talk about you have such variety in set. So that's going to be a lot of fun, and so we'll see it's in Saturday Matinee, so I assume that they're sort of family friendly, but we'll see.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. We love animation on this podcast.
Yes.
So yeah. So okay. Until then, please subscribe and rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can reach us on Twitter if you would like at Criterion Pod. And also in the meantime, Rosa, thank you for being here. Thank you for being our first guest to return. I hope that you find this a welcoming environment. And where can people find you on the internet?
Oh man, thank you so much for having me back. And hopefully I'm the first one that comes back three times. I am more more than happy to come back. You're both amazing. And I really do appreciate doing these episodes with you guys. I'm on every social media platform at Rosa's Reviews. And then if you guys can also follow Latinx Lens, we're on every podcast platform. And we're also on every social media platform at Latinx Lens. And thank you for having me.
Thank you, Rosa. And Rachel, where can people find you?
Yes, you can find me at Rachel's Reviews, all over social media, iTunes, YouTube, and on Rotten Tomatoes. And I had a lot of fun this last weekend getting to be on the virtual film festival, Guy at the Movies Virtual Film Festival. And we did a panel on toxic fandom, which I think went really well. Me and my friend Durbin from Durbania, we talked about it. And then we had on Sunday, we had a live episode of the Hallmarkies podcast where we talked about the movie Hitch. So a lot of fun stuff going on over there. So make sure you check that out. And we've got some really, we're actually, if you can believe it, we're starting to gear up for Christmas coverage on the Hallmarkies podcast. Oh, wow. It'll be here before we know it. So make sure you're subscribed because it's going to be so much fun. And I'm really looking forward to it. And so yeah, you can check out Hallmarkies podcast for some really fun fall and Christmas films coming up.
Great. And you can find me on Twitter at Coco Hits New York. And I also write about movies over at my blog, which is cocohitsny.wordpress.com. Thank you everyone for being here.
Thank you. Bye everyone.
It's the Criterion. It's the Criterion. Criterion, 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 and Cry.